Welcome to the Morning Lineup Podcast. I'm Richard Justice of MLB.com, joined by my friend and co-worker, Mark Vinesand of MLB.com. Mark, how are you?
I'm good, Richard. How are you?
Good. We got a lot going on today. We've got a new manager for the Yankees, the 35th in history. We've got Giancarlo Stanton holding all the cards. We've got some interesting non-tendered names. But first, we're going to start with the news of the day so far, Shohei Ohtani. It looks like, well, I don't know what to say, we have some clarity in where he's going to go, but the place that probably you and I both thought he would end up is not going to be his destination. Can you give us some clarity?
Well, you know, it seems like on Sunday, a lot of teams were informed either that they were in or they were out in terms of being a finalist. And one team that found out it was out was the New York Yankees, who I think a lot of people had tabbed as, if not the favorite, certainly one of the front runners to get Ohtani's name on a contract when all was said and done. There weren't necessarily reasons given out as to why that was the case, but based on a lot of the teams that we're seeing, it seems like the West Coast teams have a little bit of a better chance here. And, you know, Brian Cashman said, I can't change that we're a big market and I can't change that we're in the East. So if you're reading between the lines of what he said if he was a West Coast team from a smaller market, he'd be excited. You know, that puts teams like the Seattle Mariners, maybe the San Diego Padres in the mix. You know, the Giants, the Dodgers, they're not small markets, but they are West Coast. So certainly it seems like we're narrowing down the list.
Yeah, and let's go back to try to define what we know. And it's just for everyone to know, there's moving parts in this. So for teams like the Cubs and the Rangers, we don't know yet. The Rangers are in their bunker considering their options, but there's a heavy West Coast flavor to this list. The Seattle Mariners seem to have some degree of confidence. You know, Jerry DePoto is a very persuasive guy about that. And then in terms of the Giants, the Padres, the Dodgers, we just don't know. And I think it's also important, Mark, for us to say, don't look at the rotation. Don't look at the lineup. This guy is from another world, literally and figuratively. He's 23 years old. He's going to be a smash. He's going to be a star. And you and I don't know whether he's going to end up being a full-time pitcher, but teams look at him as an immediate contributor from a pitching standpoint, and we're going to try to work around it and get him at bats offensively. As you look at the clubs, do you have a sense where would be the most comfortable fit?
Well, I think Seattle, you know, based on the West Coast, seeming the West Coast preference and the preference that it seems for not one of the largest markets, I mean, Seattle would seem to be a great fit. There's been a precedence there for a Japanese superstar in terms of Ichiro. There's a lot of, you know, big Japanese community there. So in terms of his comfort and fitting into a city, that seems like a pretty good one for him. You know, the Mariners also have some star power on their team with the likes of Robinson Cano and Nelson Cruz and, you know, Kyle Seager and Felix Hernandez. So, you know, you're going to a team that believes it should be a contender. And, you know, in terms of the guy who's trying to recruit him there, there's probably not a better recruiter or a smoother guy than Jerry DePoto. So, you know, I think the Mariners have made it very clear that he has been their number one priority above everything else this offseason. And, you know, it's probably a good feeling to know how much you're wanted by a team and by a place. So, you know, if I had to handicap it right now, I mean, you know, Seattle certainly looks like a good bet, but, you know, you certainly can't count out the Giants. How wild would it be? And we'll discuss it later on. How wild would it be if the Giants wound up landing both Ohtani and Giancarlo Stanton?
Yeah, and are the idea of Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani playing together, are the Dodgers with all that star power, and the Padres are building something great in Southern California. It's really interesting. You know, one of the things I think, Mark, is it's important to manage expectations, whoever gets this guy. When Yao Ming came to the Houston Rockets, my hometown, Jeff Van Gundy said, because we didn't see that much of him when he was playing in China, we all thought he was going to be Wilt and Kareem and Olajuwon all rolled into one. And I think that's the way it's going to be with Ohtani. we're mentioning Babe Ruth. I mean, no one has done what he's trying to do in 99 years. Babe Ruth last year with the Red Sox, because when he got to the Yankees, his days as a pitcher were over. And I think what I've read in you know, from Japanese reporters is this guy's not Babe Ruth. This guy is a frontline, top of the rotation starter, throws 100, great command of the strike zone, and he can hit. And the thing that makes this experiment different is that he badly wants to hit, and what he wants teams to outline, how are you going to get me at bats? I think you and I would say, okay, that would mean an AL team would have an advantage. So how do you look at like what you've heard? Who is this guy as a player?
Well, look, first of all, let me just make sure I have this right. You think Babe Ruth is too high a bar to set?
That led me to a tangent to look up, you know, who didn't vote for Babe Ruth on the first ballot for the Hall of Fame? Anyway, that has nothing to do with anything. Yeah, that bar is too high. But you know, and I just say this, this is going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, I was enthralled with Yu Darvish when he came over here. How does pitching at a high level there translate to pitching at a high level there? Well, we found out it translates very well. And I just think this guy, and you know, you haven't seen pieces on him on TV. This guy walks like a superstar. He's been covered like a superstar. I don't think any of the tension or any of that stuff is going to phase him. I think you and I would agree pitching translates. But it's just going to be just one of the great storylines to watch next season to see if he can do this. And if he can do it, it's going to change the way scouts look at every college player in America now.
I agree. And, you know, I think the Babe Ruth thing aside, and obviously the comparison there is based just on the fact that he pitches and hits. I think, like you said, pitching translates. We've seen guys come over from Japan, Tanaka, Nomo, Darvish, and have very little, you know, trouble adapting to big league play and adapting their stuff. You know, maybe the pitching every 5 days is a little bit of an issue at times, but the stuff is the stuff. Hitting's been a different story. We've seen a couple of hitters come over from Japan and really thrive. Obviously, you know, Ichiro was superb and won the MVP in his rookie year. Hideki Matsui didn't miss a beat. He didn't hit the 50 home runs that he hit in Japan, but he was certainly a very productive big leaguer during his career. With Ohtani, I think most teams were looking at him as a pitcher and saying, we know you can do this. We expect you to be a top of the rotation guy. We're going to give you a chance to hit because you want to and because you've shown that you can do it over there. That said, if the hitting doesn't translate over here, they can also say, you know what, we gave it a try. Let's hold off on the hitting for a little bit. Let's concentrate on the pitching because we know that's, you know, you're doing well at that. We want you to be even better at that. I think they'll get whatever team ends up with him, will give him a try and let him attempt to do the two-way thing. But I think most of these teams are looking at him as a pitcher. And if the hitting comes, that's a bonus. But also the fact that you're not committing $100 million or $150 million to a guy, you can play around with it a little bit and figure it out. You're not relying. Nobody's bringing him over here to be their cleanup hitter. They're bringing him over here to be a top of the rotation guy. And if he can hit and if he can play a little outfield or DH a little bit, even better.
Yeah, that's a good point. I forgot, you know, with the money that teams are limited and what they can spend. So we've never had anything like this, a guy that wants to pitch and hit. And it's not about money. It's, hey, where do you want to play?
Well, and that's why, you know, that's why when people hear the Yankees and Red Sox are out of it, you're not used to hearing those two teams publicly thrust aside by a free agent because it's always about the money. And even if a free agent has zero intent of signing with the Yankees or Red Sox, you want one or both of those teams publicly to theoretically be in the mix, at least to help drive up the price.
Well, it seems like we're, you know, what are we down to, 19 days or something that this has to be settled? So we're coming to a conclusion, right?
It would seem that way. And with the winter meetings set for next week, I would assume that, you know, these meetings in LA with teams would be happening this week. Maybe he's signed by the end of this week and it's all resolved by the winter meetings. Maybe it happens at the winter meetings, but I would assume that with the teams being narrowed down and, you know, by our current count at the time we're recording this, about half the league eliminated already, I would think that this is sort of sprinting towards a finish in the next few days.
Okay. A guy that you and I both know well, Aaron Boone, an unconventional hire, is the 35th manager of the New York Yankees. He has not coached. he has not managed at any level. Gut reaction there, Mark.
I like it. You know, I think every team is now looking for their version of Dave Roberts, their version of AJ Hinch, their young guy who's going to come in and sort of make a name for himself rather than going the retread route and finding guys who have been through it a number of times before. You know, I don't think anybody who's ever met Aaron Boone has come away thinking, man, that guy's really unimpressive. I mean, he's a really impressive guy in terms of his baseball knowledge, his personality. You know, he's always in the center of the crowd. People are drawn to him. And I think with what baseball has turned into now in terms of, you know, we've talked about this before that, you know, with the analytics that have really taken over a lot of the sport, the GM has become the face of a franchise more so than the manager. This is not, you know, the 70s or 80s or even the 90s anymore. I think Boone's going to relate really well with his players. I think he's going to handle the New York press brilliantly. And I think he's willing to embrace the analytics and work with the front office. So, you know, everything the Yankees were looking for, other than the experience factor, I think Aaron Boone checked off all the boxes.
Yeah, and you know, as you looked at the candidates, so many of those guys had never managed. I guess Eric Wedge was the only guy with any major league experience in terms of managing, and none of those guys had even managed in the minor leagues or anything. I think, you know, Brian Cashman was looking for a guy who could connect in the clubhouse, and especially with these young guys. And Aaron Boone is a great communicator. When he was a player, he was one of those guys that was at his locker after every game. You know, would you rather have a guy, Mark, that went around and did games for ESPN and quizzed Showalter? He quizzed Hinch and Buck Martinez. He's a curious guy. He's a people person. And the ability to relate to players is the first thing Brian Cashman was looking for. We have 17 of 30 managers now. It's their first managing jobs. 26 managers, including Aaron, attended college. But would you rather have that? Do you think? I mean, we've written a new blueprint. Do you think his work at ESPN is more important than just riding a bus through the minor leagues?
I think it is. I think the fact, like you said, he would sit in Buck Showalter's office and talk to him and get insight from him. He knows all 30 teams intimately from his work with ESPN the last 6-7 years. So I do agree that I think that's a great strength for him and a great help for him. The two biggest drawbacks for Joe Girardi were his inability to relate on a personal level with his players. They all liked him. They all respected him. But I don't think you would have found any of them who would have run through a wall for him. And I think that's what they were looking for, is a guy who can relate and connect to the players to the point where those guys are going to want to, you know, play harder because they're playing for him. And the other thing that Joe didn't have was, you know, he had a cordial relationship with the press, but he was certainly not considered a forthcoming type of manager. And of course, following Joe Torre, who might be the best media manager of all time, wasn't easy for Girardi. But I think Boone, having been that kind of player when it came to the media, and obviously being a member of the media the last 6-7 years, I think, you know, he's going to be fantastic. And there are still a couple guys on the Yankees beat who covered him as a player, you know, and some guys around New York like myself who covered him as a player. So I think Boone's going to handle those parts of the jobs great. And I think at this point, GMs believe that you can teach the other stuff, you know. You know, I know it's going to be, you know, the first time that he has to make a tough decision in the seventh inning about whether to pull Dylan Betances. That's something he hasn't gone through. But I think having Larry Rothschild next to him will be a great help for him as well, because Larry's been the pitching coach there for a few years and knows every pitcher on that staff. And with the exception of possibly Ohtani, if they get him, every other pitcher on the Yankees staff next year should be a guy who was there last season.
We can't emphasize enough how much the job of managing a Major League Baseball team has changed. There's an avalanche of data coming from the front office. They're going to tell you where the left fielder should stand when Clayton Kershaw is on the mound and Aaron Judge is at the plate. They're going to tell you that. They're going to tell you what your optimal lineup is. You don't have to accept it. They're going to tell you what your best late inning matchups are. They're going to help you play the game before it's played. But what can't replace, and I think you would agree with me, is the manager's job now is to get a good effort every night and to make sure the players know you have their back and that you buy in. And Jim Bowden had a great line to someone about Aaron Boone. He has the swag of a player. And what Jim said was, that's important with this generation. Very few have it, and you can't fake it. He's 44 years old. seems like, and I know it's been 8 years since he played, but it seems like he spent his whole life around baseball. His grandfather played, his brother played, his dad was a player and a manager. And I want to tell Mark, if I can, just a couple of funny stories, some serious stories. He took a $1 million pay cut at Cleveland when he thought he wasn't playing well. When he tore up his knee playing basketball with the Yankees, he was quite honest about it. But our mutual friend, Hal McCoy from the Dayton Daily News, was going to quit one spring because his eyesight was so bad. And Aaron just went to him and said, "I don't want to hear you say the word quit again. You're not leaving here. You're too valuable to the Reds, to your newspaper, to your city, and all of that." Now, the flip side of that is Aaron Wood after that. I mean, Hal McCoy cries when he talks about Aaron Boone. He voted for him for the Hall of Fame. But the flip side of that is Aaron did go to Hal one day and go, I don't want to burst your bubble, but you're interviewing the Coke machine.
I'll give you an assist there. The Jim Bowden quote was to our buddy Tyler Kepner in the New York Times, and he wrote a great piece about Aaron and his baseball lineage. The idea of him having the swag of a player, I think, is important because the players are going to know he's the manager, but he also has to be a guy who, you know, they can go into the office and shoot the breeze with, and a guy that they're going to be able to confide in and talk to and trust. And I think, as odd as it sounds, this is another place where him having worked for ESPN and having been on Sunday Night Baseball will help him, because these guys all watch that. These guys all go home and watch that game, and they know, you know, that he's the guy hanging around the batting cage before a Sunday night game when they're taking BP. There's a familiarity there. There's nobody in that clubhouse who's going to say, "Who's this guy we just hired?" And, you know, if Chris Woodward had gotten hired, there's a good chance that some guys would have said, "Who is this guy again?" I'm Eric Wedge, same thing. And, you know, I think one thing the Yankees will do, they will bring in a strong bench coach to work with Aaron. Eric Wedge, to me, is the perfect candidate. And when I heard he was a candidate for the managerial job, to me, that felt like a bench coach interview as much as anything. He actually managed Aaron in Cleveland. So that feels like a possibility. No inside information there. It just seems like it would be a good fit if Wedge did impress them in the interview process as well. So, they'll put a veteran voice on the bench with them there. He's got Larry Rothschild. They will make sure to surround Aaron Boone with everything he needs to be successful. And then if Aaron Judge goes out and hits 50 home runs and Gary Sanchez hits 30 and Luis Severino, you know, finishes top three in the Cy Young Award again, then, you know, he'll probably do pretty well.
And Mark and I both want to emphasize that there are things we don't know. But had you managed another team, had you managed in the minors, in winter ball, in the World Baseball Classic, whatever you've done in baseball, it does not prepare you for managing the New York Yankees. The repetition of the questions each day, the microscope you play under, it's the best place on the planet to manage baseball, but it's also the toughest place. And you, Mark and I have both seen perfectly normal human beings driven to the brink of insanity by the pressure and the fact that, you know, when you're a player, you can change the outcome of a game. When you're a manager, you have to trust others. And so what we are saying, I think, is that Aaron Boone is an exciting hire, and he's as qualified as anybody ever. And we're going to find out the rest. It's a gutsy move by Brian Cashman. Brian Cashman's had a great run here lately in rebuilding the farm system, in building a great bullpen, and building a very good rotation. And I have no reason to think this is not another great move by Brian Cashman.
You know, Richard, you talked about how this job has done a lot of strange things to perfectly normal people. I mean, Joe Girardi had managed in the big leagues. He won the Manager of the Year award in the National League with the Marlins in his 1 year in Florida, and then came to New York and had some trouble with some of the things that come along with managing the Yankees, especially the press responsibilities. But, you know, they didn't make the playoffs that first year. It was the first time in 12 years they hadn't made the playoffs. I mean, there was an adjustment period for Joe, who played in New York for World Series teams and had managed in the big leagues. So, like you said, unless you've done it here or in a place like here, where, you know, maybe Boston, or there's not many places you can really compare, it's tough, you know. And so I think, like you said, any of those other guys, just because Wedge had managed in Cleveland and Seattle, or just because Mullins had been a coach in San Francisco, or I don't think any of them would have been any better prepared for what the Yankees bring than Aaron Boone would have been. And, you know, look, I have no idea if this guy's going to be able to manage. I have no idea if this is going to work out or not. But I like the forward thinking. I like the fact that, you know, apparently he wowed everybody in the interview process to the extent where, even with all these other candidates, that they everybody involved, all nine people who were part of the interview process, came out of that interview process and said, this isn't even close. Aaron Boone is the guy by a mile over everybody else we talked to. And, you know, it's a gutsy hire. It's a big roll of the dice. It's a you know, if this doesn't work, this will be a big black mark on Brian Cashman's resume. So, you know, Hal Steinbrenner entrusted him to make this decision. And he did. And, you know, now he and Aaron Boone are sort of out on that ledge together.
And I think you and I agreed that when we saw Aaron's name on the list, we both thought the same thing. Whoa, that would be interesting. You know, that would be an exciting candidate. Anyway, we're going to move on now. Giancarlo Stanton has the leverage. And he's never let's just start with this point. He's never played on a 500 team. He's never been to the postseason, obviously. And I think what he's trying to think right now, our colleague John Paul Morosi is reporting that the Marlins have the framework of a trade in place for Stanton with the Giants and the Cardinals. And I think it's been reported, and I think we sort of agree, that Giancarlo would like to exhaust his options with the Dodgers. It's a team he grew up rooting for. I think he wants to be back. If you know, he has no trade protection on this. He got that right through his last contract. And so he gets to pick where he wants to go. At some point, though, the Marlins, Derek Jeter, may come to him and say, we couldn't get a deal with the Dodgers. It didn't work out. And personally, what I know of the Dodgers, I think they're going the other way with payroll. I don't think a 10-year, $295 million contract makes sense for them. But he is an exciting player. So anyway, Mark, San Francisco and St. Louis seem to be the two most logical places for Giancarlo Stanton right now. And as Morosi said, they have a framework of a deal in place. What do you think he's weighing right now, Mark?
What you said is probably the case, where he wants to make sure that the Dodgers aren't an option. And, you know, I've heard the same things that you have in terms of the Dodgers and the payroll and where they're going. But here's a possibility that I think exists. I'm not sold that he gets traded this winter. Because if it turns out that the Cardinals and Giants are the two teams that are, you know, ready to rock and ready to make this happen now, taking on all or most of that contract, et cetera, but he still just has his heart set on the Dodgers being the only place he wants to go. The Dodgers have a lot of money coming off the payroll after 2018. They've got $22 million or so in Adrian Gonzalez. They've got about $17.5 million in Scott Kazmir, $11.5 million in Brandon McCarthy, $9 million in Logan Forsythe, almost $8 million in Hyunjin Ryu. So that's a lot of money right there. I mean, I'm not a mathematician, but it's about about $70 million or so they have coming off the payroll after this coming season. So maybe if the Dodgers or if Stanton's mindset is, well, they get $70 million knocked off, then maybe they're in a position to make a trade, and that's where I want to go. Because Stanton has to assume that wherever he goes, that's where he's going to be for a while. He can opt out of this deal, but I have a hard time believing, given unless he hits 50 in the next 2 or 3 years, that he's going to opt out. So I think if he thinks there's even a remote chance of him going to LA, I think maybe he says, you know what, I'm going to ride this out at least until the midseason or maybe till next year, and it'll put him in a bad spot with his team. They'll probably have to trade some other guys, and the Marlins will get worse as a result of it. But you'd have to think that Stanton's looking out for number one before anything else.
Yeah, and I think Giancarlo Stanton is the first domino to fall in South Florida, and they're not going to trade him, and they're not going to trade Marcelo Ozuna, Christian Yelich. You don't even discuss those guys until they get Stanton and the money off the books, because Ozuna and Yelich are going to bring a passel of prospects, I think, you know. And so I think they want to get that cleared up. You know, I have a different view of the Dodgers. I think Andrew Friedman holds prospects, and he has a lot of them, and he has the prospects to make this deal. I think he holds them in such high regard in terms of dollar value, and this is a big contract for a guy who's been hurt some. While he would bring in a certain electricity, 59 home runs to Dodger Stadium, I don't know if they need that electricity. I think what Giancarlo has to look at is the San Francisco Giants and say, if they get me, can they contend? because you and I would look at it and say, okay, you're going to get him, but you might want to go get Todd Frazier and Lorenzo Cain and Greg Hall, a setup guy, you know, a Brandon Morrow, somebody like that. Now you're pushing $250 million on your payroll and you can't do that. Then that comes to St. Louis. Would you be willing to play in St. Louis? It seems clear to me that St. Louis is a fallback option for him. And then you get down to, okay, are you better just, as you said, waiting and waiting for that money to come off the books, and would the Dodgers take another look at it and all of that stuff? Well, I, you know, it is having an impact on the coal hot stove league, and at some point we will get some resolution on this, and maybe that would free things up. But it's fascinating to watch, because you've got an off season in which the most interesting player in the history of Japanese baseball is going to come here, and you have the National League MVP, 59 home runs on the market, and then you have, you know, not a deep free agent class, but a quality free agent class. So we'll see how that works out. Now, let's move on to another topic. Clubs had to submit their rosters on Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern time, and the players that they did not tender contracts to, meaning the players they were not going to offer arbitration to, become free agents. And you did a piece on that, Mark, of some of the names that caught your eye and said, okay, this changes the free agent class at least a little bit. Could you talk about some of those guys?
Yeah, I'm not sure it changes the free agent class in terms of the guys at the top, but I think it adds, I think about two dozen players were non-tender, but there were about a half dozen that caught my eye as guys who are going to draw interest, you know, from a number of clubs. You know, Drew Smyly was non-tender by the Mariners, was not at all a surprise. I mean, he had Tommy John surgery last year. He's out at least half of this year. But this is going to be one of those things. I compared it with Nathan Eovaldi about a year ago. They were making about the same money. They both got, non-tendered. Actually, Eovaldi was a free agent. But Eovaldi signed a $2 million deal with the Rays for last year to basically rehab on their watch with a $2 million option for 18. This is going to give a team a chance to, you know, take a risk on Smyly. And that's not going to cost a ton of money. Let him rehab, under their watch, and then be a low-cost alternative for the rotation the following year. This is a guy who's been very well regarded. I mean, he was traded for David Price once, and he's been involved in a couple of trades. And, he's a guy with really good stuff. He's still young, and, you know, at this point, nobody gets scared away by Tommy John surgery. So he'll be an interesting name out there. Jared Hughes, a non-tender by the Brewers. He's been a very good reliever, really a ground ball machine. I would imagine that he'll be coveted by a number of teams looking for bullpen help. Last year, his hits per inning got cut down and strikeouts per nine went up. So really just a matter of the Brewers not wanting to pay an arbitration raise. Matt Adams, another really interesting guy. The Braves tried desperately to trade him this week. He hit 19 homers and had an OPS of 858 in 100 games for them last year, filling in for Freddie Freeman, but he's not going to supplant Freddie Freeman and doesn't play anywhere else besides first base. So without a DH, the Braves really had no reason to bring him back to pay him $5 or $6 million. So he should draw some interest, I would think, from an American League team that could use him at first base and DH. Last year certainly brought him back into the fold, though. Those were probably the three that caught my eye immediately when I looked at the list.
Yeah, you know, Matt Adams, 29 years old. And we've looked at him for a long time as on the brink of stardom. I think the bottom line is, at this point in his career, we're going to say maybe Matt is not a guy that's going to hit left-handed pitching enough. You know, maybe he is going to be a platoon guy. But given his power, given the way he's gotten himself into the great shape last year, he's a guy you really root for. And I know you and I know Matt Holliday and some of those guys in St. Louis. They really liked Matt. You know, the guy that stuck out for me, and I don't know what kind of offer he's going to get, is Mike Fiers. He was with the Astros last year. He's 32 years old. I'm telling you, when they had the whole starting rotation on the disabled list, Mike Fiers and Brad Peacock saved their butts last year. He had about 13 starts in a row in the middle of the season with an ERA under 3. And they're going to probably win the American League. The Astros win the American League West without Mike Fiers. But he's certainly a guy with a good curveball and worth taking a chance on. It just adds to the interest of free agency, and you know, and it's a gamble for teams and all of that. So that one's worth watching. Well, for a hot stove that's not really hot yet, there's a lot going on, and we head to the winter meetings in Orlando on Sunday, and maybe by then we have some clarity on Stanton and Ohtani, and then who knows what happens.
I was going to say, Richard, with all this talk about the cold hot stove, I'm envisioning you and I standing in the lobby of the Swan and Dolphin next Monday, looking at each other going, remember when we didn't have anything to do and now we don't have a second to breathe? So careful what you wish for in terms of the stove heating up, because it may start boiling over on us.
Can't wait.